Good morning, everybody. This is Bo Mitchell. You're listening to You Get the Blessing. And these are the Beatles. So wake up. Because all you really need is love. Frank, Nancy, I know you're still sleeping. It's time to get up. There's nothing you can do that can't be done. Paul and Marge have been up an hour. Nothing you can sing that can't be sung. Nothing you can say, but you can learn how to play the game. It's easy. The Beatles were writing good songs. Nothing you can make that can't be made. No one you can save that can't be saved. Only goes to show you God can use anybody. Amen. Well, welcome again, everybody. This show exists because we introduce you each week to special guests that we believe are impacting this community for the cause of Christ. And our guest today is Shelley Long. Shelley, pleasure having you here.
Thank you for having me.
We're going to have a good time talking about your life, your ministry.
Let's hope not too much about my life.
No, we're going to start right there, actually. So tell me about where you were raised. Where you were entertained by your parents, what town was that at, and what was happening around your house?
I grew up in Arvada, Colorado, right here.
Really?
Uh-huh. My dad passed away when I was 4 years old, heart transplant.
Gee whiz.
Yeah, that was not good. But my mom remarried and moved me from Commerce City to Arvada. As a matter of fact, I live in the exact same house I grew up in still to this day.
And can you remember being... like a day or a month or years messed up because your dad died?
When my mom moved us to Arvada, I was about two blocks from a brand new church that started, Colorado Bible Church, and they went door to door. The Sunday school bus route came to our house, invited me to church. And little side note, before I got to that church, my parents had taken me to a church down the street, my mom and my new stepdad, and the Sunday school teacher said that if Jesus wasn't in your heart when you died, you were going to go to hell. You need to ask Jesus into your heart. You know, that same old phrase you hear.
That was a fog cutter for you?
That was a terrible thing for me because I knew my dad had just lost his heart. I thought, well, my gosh, they took Jesus out of my dad and threw him away with his heart. And now my dad went to hell. It was traumatic, you know, for a little 6-year-old. Wasn't long after that, I went to another church, Colorado Bible Church, and a man named Joe Potter led me to Christ, made it very clear to me that it was trusting Christ as my Savior and what He did for me and that I had eternal life. And from that moment on, changed. It was like God had put purpose in my heart and direction. And I went to a Christian school and Bible college, met my husband there when I was 13. He came to our Christian school and we started Grace Church 29 years ago. March 12th will be our 29th anniversary.
Wow.
So right in our
Arvada. That is a nice, clean story other than your dad, Don. I'm sorry about that, but God used that to bring you to Him. My daughter was 4 years old when she heard about heaven and hell in Sunday school and came home and said, I don't want to go there. Mm-hmm. I do want to go there. Now what's the
How
step
do we do
I
this?
Take?
That's right.
And I believe even as young kids, mm-hmm. we can make that decision and it does stick.
For sure.
Did for you.
Did, absolutely.
So you married your husband, Rick?
Yep.
Wow.
High school enemies?
Not quite.
No, we really were. But it worked out.
Sweethearts and enemies?
He was teepee in my house every weekend. It was a really bad deal.
Back in those days, see, that was tough. Now, that'd be like an easy thing to teepee in. In fact, have you seen this thing where they stick forks in the yard?
Yes.
Very complex, but... Looks cool when it's done. Yeah. You had that done to you?
Oh, we've had it all. We've had the gamut. He's been a basketball coach for 20 plus years, and so we have basketball teams at our house and lots of mischief. We're on the roof egging kids, and we've had a lot of fun.
So four children of your own and four grandchildren.
I do. Four kids. My oldest is 31, and my youngest is 17. Two girls, two boys. Thank you.
So what's the key to being a good mom?
Oh. Keeping your heart open to what God has for you and knowing you do not have it all figured out.
You look to me like you could be tough, though, if you needed to be.
That's what my kids say.
They do?
I think they're more worried about me than
so
they are
my confession
dad.
Before I ask for your confession is that in defense of their mom,
my kids knew, push it just so far with disrespecting your mother and your dad will blow his top. What was yours? What was your button that just almost put you in the front page of the morning paper?
Respect.
Yeah, disrespect. That's what
disrespect.
I'm saying.
Yeah, for anybody, we just didn't tolerate it, especially me. I was raised with my stepdad who raised me was a Marine, and there's just no back talk, no disrespect, no rolling of your eyes. That's just uncalled for.
So in addition to being a mom and a grandma and a wife, you are an artist. Tell us about that.
I grew up in a ceramic shop. My parents, that was our family business.
Did they have beds and showers and stuff in the ceramic shop?
Well, we might as well have. Kind
of like a gym. As much time as you could spend there,
yes,
you were there.
You were there, yeah.
Okay. So you were comfortable, and I was uncomfortable there. I couldn't do a thing.
Yeah, so I grew up doing that, painting and learning the whole aspect of the industry, and then transferred from there into what I do now is fused glass art. I paint on glass and put it in the kiln, fuse those pieces of glass together and create scenery and landscapes. And
so it went from an interest to a hobby to a profession.
Yeah, I don't know that it was ever an interest or a hobby. It was always a family business, and it was. You're here, this is where you work. And my mom would fire me, and my dad would call me the next day and say, why aren't you at work? I said, I got fired. I don't have to work today. He said, get to work.
That's funny.
So I don't know if the interest in the hobby stage was ever there, but I do love it. It's part of my passion.
What's your favorite painting. Stuff you get to make or create?
Animals,
or
wildlife, animals? Scenery, aspen trees. Loved paint aspen trees.
And you sell this now commercially?
I could. I actually enjoy teaching rather than selling. I want to be with people. I love that part of it.
So you travel and teach?
Yes.
Wow. And plenty of opportunities to do that everywhere?
Sure. Yeah. I could teach as often as I want to, and I try not to load my schedule too much. 2 years ago, I was gone so much. I was home like 4 days in March and decided, okay, this is too much.
It sounds like me in spring training.
March Madness for basketball as well.
Mm-hmm. All the baseball players are spring training this month trying to figure out March Madness. They're playing baseball with the Rockies, but they're concentrating on March Madness.
Mm-hmm.
So you've changed that schedule a little bit and feel more balanced now. You're not going to
I don't know that I'm going to say that. I better not claim that. My kids might call in the show here.
So you added on top of all of this a great ministry we're going to talk about called One to One, One by One.
And
how did that start?
Well, I've always had a passion. I felt like, I think you're drawn to things where God has put that specific passion in your heart. And I believe equipped you to do whatever he's calling you to do. So I run across people all the time on bike paths. My husband and I were biking a lot, and we noticed a huge influx of people coming from Denver into Arvada, the suburbs. The more they were cleaning up the city streets of Denver and cleaning up buildings and making more livable high-rise, those people weren't able to sleep in front of those buildings anymore. They were going up the I-70 corridor, heading west, and now they're sleeping under the bridges between Wadsworth, Kipling, Sheridan, Federal. That whole section has got a lot of homeless. So that's right where our bike path is, where we were riding underneath those bridges every day. And you'd see tent cities along the creek bed there on the Wheat Ridge Greenbelt.
A lot of people would see that, though. Why were you drawn to stop and help?
I think, honestly, maybe you feel like, what can you do? It's an overwhelming thought when you see it, especially to see the tent city. It feels like there isn't a fix that a single person could do. However, you got to stop and think, or at least I did. Each one of those is an individual person with an individual heartache and a brokenness and vision and skills and a story. They all have a story. So
and one by one, we might be able to help.
That's exactly. I thought I can't erase the whole city, but maybe this one person that I talked to, if I could impact them for eternity, that would be
a good thing.
A great thing. I may not be able to impact today, but I'll just share with them the love of Christ and the plan of salvation, and we'll see where that goes. So started there and just tried to start having conversations. And I know You know, you can say be warmed and filled and go on your way, and you didn't meet their need for today. That could be a huge turnoff to somebody saying, I'm starving to death. You're going to give me Jesus, but you didn't give me anything to eat today. So I didn't want to be that person. So it just started taking them groceries. And, you know, I met a couple in a camper, and they had three kids living in their camper. And then I met a man named Dallas, who really changed my thought processes about the homeless. He was broke down in a King Super parking lot in Arvada. He had a little tiny black car with chains coming through the windows and all of his possessions chained to the roof of the car in these metal crates. The trunk was bungeed shut, and it wouldn't shut because there were so many things hanging out of the trunk.
And what were you doing there?
I had gone grocery shopping. It was third service. My husband was preaching, and I was getting lunch. There was, I don't know, some big sports game on, and I was cooking dinner for the family.
There's always
a sports game in my house.
Mine too.
Yeah. And there's got to be food.
And you saw this person. By the way, let me repeat that our guest today is Shelley Long. Shelley's a mom, a wife, and an artist, and also heads a ministry called One by One, which is a ministry to homeless people. And she is very attractive with a big, friendly personality. So you should be in the studio with me today. This is a very easy conversation. But I want to say, most of our listeners have heard the story of the Good Samaritan, and there's a lot of different things taught within that story. But it does discuss the number of people that just kind of saw the problem and kept on walking. Mm-hmm. And yet you initially saw folks with your husband as you're riding bikes, and now you're in the shopping center, and I can just picture you're like convicted or under compulsion or just drawn to mm-hmm. go over and talk to this person. So mm-hmm. what happened next with Dallas?
Well, it was about 10 degrees out. It was freezing.
Gee, another good reason not to do it.
It was cold, and I am a cold hater. I think God meant to drop me in Arizona, and he missed. And I ended up in Colorado.
Wasn't yesterday miserable, by the way?
Oh, yes. That wind was bitter. At least at my house, it was bitter.
Me too.
So Dallas is down on his hands and knees. He's trying to change a trailer. He's got a boat trailer attached to the back of this little car, and he's built a monstrosity on the back of this boat trailer out of OSB, particle board, 2x4s. There's so much weight that the little tiny tires on this boat trailer are flat. And he's already got a notice pinned to the side of this trailer that says vacate the King Super parking lot.
Really?
Yeah, because it's a huge eyesore. You know, nobody wants to pull up and see this. And it's taken up 3 or 4 parking spaces. And the poor guy's down on his hands and knees, and he's trying to fix this.
You're seeing about 5 problems as you approach.
Oh, it screams homeless to begin with. And I knew I can't change his tire. I don't even have any tools. I don't even know why I'm approaching him, because I see his problem as something that I can't fix, but I'm going to go ask him if I can help him anyways. So I walked up and said, "Hi, I know I can't change your tire, but how can I help you? What do you need that I could actually help you with?" He turned around with a big smile and just said, "The fact that you actually said hello, I'll carry that for a month. That'll be enough just to make me believe in humanity again for a month." He had the most joyful personality and quite the joker. And he said, "Honestly, I just don't have the right tool to get this nut off. I already have a place that'll fix my tire. I just can't get it off of the trailer." I said, "Well, we'll fix that." I started flagging down cars driving by, walking over to trucks. I saw trucks with great big tires. I'm thinking, that's a tool guy. And I said, "Do you have any, you know, tools? I don't know what it is, but I need a tool over here. Can you come look?" So finally, a guy handed me a whole socket set out of his window and said, "I have an extra. I don't even need this. I'm sure you'll find it." And he handed me the whole thing. Now, he wouldn't come over with me, but he handed me the whole socket set. I'm like, that's awesome.
Mother Teresa said, I'm sure you've heard, that every time she saw someone, she saw Christ in a desperate situation.
Yes.
And that's what you saw with this kid.
Yeah, broken. I'm thinking, if I was on my hands and knees in 10, please, somebody, just help me.
And then also meeting the person where his need was, not, I've been taught by our inner city pastors, you know, that white people in the suburbs often just kind of throw down to the city whatever we have in terms of surplus, whatever.
Right.
And it's not exactly what they need.
They needed.
So you could have given this guy a meal or $100 or whatever, but he needed his tire changed.
Yeah. And
so
I knew
you flagged the cars down. That's good.
I did. I thought maybe I'd get somebody to change the tire, but, and he said, oh no, I'm capable. I can change the tire. I said, okay, well, let's see if we find the tool. Found the tool. And I said, now what else do you need? I said, I see that this is more of a desperate situation beyond your tire. Are you homeless? He said, yes, I am. I said, are you trying to live in that trailer? He said, yes, I am. I said, okay, how do we help you not live in that trailer?
You make it sound so easy, but I'm sure our listeners are thinking, that's courageous.
So he said, well, my first problem is that there's no door on the back of the trailer, and the police have told me that I can't drive it on the streets, but if I can make some kind of a door on the back of the trailer, they'll let me drive it. He says, I got power tools inside. I can do the work. I ran out of supplies. I can't find any more wood, and I need a door. I said, well, I have builders in my small group. I have the CEO of Saunders Construction Company, one of my good friends, John Beeble. My other good friend is Dr. Kevin Chapman. He has a wood shop in his backyard.
Is Beeble maybe the nicest guy you've ever met?
He is amazing.
He's a friend.
And Rick, my husband, was preaching, so I couldn't call him. And I said, who am I going to call? My husband's on the stage. It's not like he's going to take my phone call. He might actually have taken my phone call. So I called John and Kevin, and I said, fellas, I know this is strange, but can you meet me down here at King Soopers? I have a problem, and you're the guys to fix it. It was a huge Bronco playoff game. If I remember Rick telling me, it meant nothing to me that day, but Rick's like, it's the Raiders. You just called them out of this big game. And they met me down there, and they looked at the trailer and said, Shelley, what are you doing? I said, he needs a door on the back of this trailer.
Not tomorrow, not next week.
So he can drive
right
it.
Now.
So Dallas was gone. He'd taken the tire off to go get it repaired, and they're walking around this trailer with me looking at it like he's got blue jeans rolled up in the crevices where the wood wouldn't meet to like fill up the cracks and keep it warm inside. And they said, these tires aren't going to hold this weight. We can put a door on it, but he's going to have flat tires every other day. This is not possible. I said, okay, well, let's put him in a hotel for right now, and then we'll figure this out. So the fellas are like, we'll pay for the hotel. You call one. So I started calling through. We
called the Brown Palace. Yeah. Called the Broadmoor. You got a room?
So we found a motel off of I-70 and Kipling there. Told Dallas, listen, it's too cold. You can't sleep in this thing tonight. We can't fix it today. You know, we might need to put our heads together and figure out the trailer situation, but let's get you somewhere warm. So we drove him over there, got him checked in.
Is he crying yet?
No, he was stunned.
I bet.
As we began to have a conversation with him, you could tell he was an addict. Mm. He was on meth. And when I talked to him about it, he said, I'm not on a huge amount, but I'm on enough that keeps me awake every day so I can work. Well, he would go find a job on Craigslist or do something, and he'd go get that done. And, you know, he was very ingenuitive.
No part of this scared you?
No, didn't. Until I texted my husband and said what I was doing, and he said, what are you doing? Who are you with? Do not be alone. I said, I'm fine. It's all good.
Seems like I know your husband. Has he done this program?
Yes.
Yeah, he is great. I remember he was sitting there talking. I was thinking, this guy's got to be a great preacher.
Oh, my. He is.
I can picture him saying all that to
you. It takes a full-time schedule just to manage him.
So give us kind of fast forward a little bit on Dallas. Is he okay
today,
now?
Today, Dallas is living in Alamosa. It's a full-time job. He's got a house. He's getting married August 1st to a beautiful lady with two kids. Dallas is clean. I mean, it went from, Dallas, what do you need, to calling Dallas every couple of days. Dallas, how you doing? Buddy, let's get a job. You've got to get a job. We've got to get rid of the trailer. This thing is your anchor. Let's get a job. He did. We got to get off meth. He did. And it was just having somebody to kind of walk through it with him. And it was, you know, we paid for things here and there, pick him up on the off ramp when he had a flat tire, little things. It wasn't a huge inconvenience to anybody's life. It was being a friend.
And the scripture that says, when you've done it to the least of these, you've done it to me, that's one of your taglines.
Yeah.
I
look at Dallas and I think that could be my son. He's about my son's age. That could be my boy. And at any given moment, it could be me. I think we're all one poor decision away from sliding line of decisions that could put you there.
Mm-hmm. Does Dallas call you mom yet or just friend?
He does.
He calls you mom. I was thinking you became more than a friend, that's for sure.
He jokingly says his mom passed away. So he said, you know, you are my mom. You saved my life.
Wow. So calling out the best in people brings out the best in people. And you didn't just do it for him, but you sure called out the best by saying, we can do better than this.
Right.
Now let's do it together. And then you showed him how.
Right.
So from there, one by one grew. And now how many people are you touching?
Oh, gosh, there's 1,460-some people on the page right now. I started the page thinking, I'll just share the story. I'll share Dallas's story, first of all, and say, hey, you can do this. Just pull up, ask him if they need help, and just walk the process with him. It took almost a year. So I met him in December of 2016, and December of 2017, he's engaged. And he's got a house, and he's got this amazing life.
So if you're single, folks, and would like to be married, give it 1 year and call Shelley Long at 1-800-IN-LOVE.
So I started the page thinking I'll just share the story and you'll share your story and we'll all just collaborate on resources.
And these 1,400 people have access to the webpage?
Yeah, so it's a group. It's a Facebook group and people join. And from there we post on the page, hey, let me introduce you to Patrick. Here's Patrick's story. Patrick's been homeless for this many months or a year, and I'll tell the person's story and put a picture of him on the page. So I go out, I meet people, I find out what their story is, and I have some criteria. Are you homeless? Could be a couch living at a friend's that's not yours, hotel, in your car, on the street, and in a tent, whatever the situation. You're homeless, living in the city of Arvada or close by, and you are willing and able to work a full-time job. So right now you're flying a sign, you're doing day labor. Will you put that sign down and get a full-time job? That's what I'm going to ask you.
So it sounds a lot sweeter, but a little like our friend Bob Cote, who passed away a few years ago at Step 13, and his slogan was, work works.
It's the answer.
If you're going to stay here, his was recovering alcoholics, you will work.
Yeah.
And
there's lots of programs.
And all kinds of good reasons to do that. It's like sports. I like shoving, not nudging, but shoving my kids into sports because it teaches you
absolutely
teamwork and respect for authority and
discipline,
time commitment and discipline and winning and losing.
Dealing with things you don't like, being uncomfortable.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Do you want the ball when it's the last minute
initiative
of the game, or do you go and hide in the corner of the court? Mm-hmm. So what you're saying there teaches a lot.
Yeah. So we told them there's lots of social programs out there that are obviously aids designed to help you, but they can also cripple you if you just depend on them. So you have the power inside you. God has already given you the ability and the skills in some capacity to do this on your own. But will you? If you will, I'll walk with you with our whole page here. We'll make sure that if you go get a job, you won't starve. We'll make sure you have a bus pass to get to work, that your phone's working, that you've got food. The last thing, I can't change your housing right now. So if you're sleeping behind Walmart tonight, you might have to sleep behind Walmart tomorrow. But guess what? The sun is going to rise in the morning and it's going to set. And in 2 weeks, if you don't get a job, you're going to be in the same place you were in 2 weeks. But if you do get a job, in 2 weeks, you got a paycheck. From that moment on, we can change your life. You can get at least 3 nights in a hotel. Next time, maybe 5 nights in a hotel. Then we can pay for a week. Then we can pay for a month. It's $1,600 to $2,000 a month to live in a hotel.
Shh.
If you're paying daily, you're up to $2,000 plus.
I've had friends in ministry try to buy some of these motels.
I would love one.
And they say because of that expense you just mentioned, the prices are so high, it makes no sense to buy them.
Yeah.
Because they're charging so much. And everybody's paycheck goes completely to paying their rent.
Yeah, so we realized, even if we get you in there, now we've got to teach you how to budget and make a plan to get out. Because the hotel gets you cover for right now, so you're not freezing to death.
But so you go to bed at night having trouble sleeping,
yes,
thinking about, I'm a real estate agent and I have 1,400 listings. How can I possibly do a good job with...
While I'm sleeping in my warm bed.
Yeah, well, I have all of these people that need my help. Are you just feel spread too thin or crazy, or do you find some joy in this somewhere?
Oh, there's loads of joy. And I tell you, it's a front row seat to God's parade of miracles, because it isn't me. It's me saying, if you do this, God will do it with you. He will meet you right where you're at. He'll provide for you.
And what do you think your unique skills are that allow you to do this?
I think I'm a problem solver, management. I like to
see a situation and you can think A, B, C will solve that.
Mm-hmm.
You're good at it. And can our listeners get involved and help in any
Absolutely.
Way?
Join the page, One by One, Helping Arvada Homeless. It's a Facebook group.
One by One.
Helping Arvada Homeless.
Okay. So look there and they could show how to donate or volunteer.
They can donate bus passes. They can do gift cards. We post on the page, hey, this person needs this. They need a job. I'll send them to the library. Here's their skills. You put links down. So you just be a champion on the page. When they get a job, applaud. Say, great job. That was awesome. They need friends. They need community. That's part of the big reason this page is successful.
And folks, you haven't heard her pounding on, I'll fix your tire if you read this chapter in the Bible and let me cram this faith of mine down your throat. That's not her style. That's not anybody's style, is doing it right as a Christian. And yet in Christian love, you're changing lives by one.
I got to baptize 9 of them in November. We had a baptism at church and they came to me and said, I want to get baptized. They'd come to church with me. They've trusted Christ. They sit with me in church every week. It's awesome. They come in. I'm like, okay, you know, they're going to have to check your backpack. Can we show up like this? I said, absolutely. So I dress down for church. I do anyways, but I never want them to feel uncomfortable, and it's awesome.
All right, we're done for now. We could go for a long time, but Shelley Long, thank you for being with us. One by One.
Helping Arvada Homeless.
Helping Arvada Homeless. Somebody listening, please jot that down and jump in and help Shelley with what she's doing. Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you, Bo. Thank you.
Blessings, folks. We'll see you next week on You Get the Blessing.